Sehr gut, sehr gut, sehr gut.
Sehr gut?
Wieso Steuer ist sehr gut? Das sagen ganz viele.
Cool, wer sagt das?
Stiftung Warentest, Computerbild, Focus Money, Chip, Finanztipp, such dir was aus.
Mega, aber das ist doch bestimmt kompliziert.
Nö, einfach Foto von der Lohnsteuerbescheinigung machen und fertig.
Klingt sehr gut.
Ist sehr gut. Hol dir dein Geld zurück mit Wieso Steuer.
All right, welcome to the podcast. You know, we were taking calls on the radio after Kamala Harris's speech, and we got so many people calling in, and we only have so much time on the radio to get to them. And there's a lot of different perspectives. There was panic. There was excitement for what's coming over the next 10 weeks. It's going to be a very interesting time as we lead up to November. But I figured we could, there were so many people who didn't get a chance to get on. I thought maybe we could take a bunch of the callers and just drop it as a bonus pod here. So let's do that now. We'll start with Jeff in North Carolina. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, how are you doing? Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you perfectly. What's going on?
First of all, I didn't watch the convention, so I can't give any feedback on that. I just couldn't stomach it.
Understandable. Understandable reaction. I wanted to do that same exact thing, except they pay me to watch it.
Right. And that's what you're getting paid for. I understand. But, the thing is, the only joy that I see in the DNC or in the Democratic Party is Joy Reid.
and that's an awful. There's also Joy Behar, and neither one exemplify Joy.
About her, yeah. Mm-hmm. Forgot about her. My reason for calling was I know Glenn and you guys have some connections to the Trump people, and one of the main talking points that I've seen and heard lately is that Trump quashed their border bill, you know, with his influence. And if my memory is not so bad, I remember when he was president, I don't think he had a lot of cooperation from Congress or, you know, from the Senate or the House or anybody. I think he had to do pretty much everything by executive orders. Am I wrong in that?
No.
And if so, I mean, why couldn't they have done the same thing?
Yeah, it's fascinating. They're all bipartisan now. And back when Trump was president, they wouldn't even entertain any of his ideas. You're right. He had to do most of it that way. And this is the problem. This is the reason why Trump was not in support of the quote unquote bipartisan bill. Part of it was that the bill wasn't that strong and he just didn't like it. But part of it also was it was an obvious attempt by the Democrats to pass quote unquote something so they could make the argument to the people that they did something on the border. And he's, you know, look, everybody saw through that. You know, Trump was not the only one. The fact that he opposed that bill was partially just because it wasn't a great bill, but also because it was just an excuse to say you did something, that something would not solve the problem. And then if Trump becomes president, there would be no more bipartisan energy there. There'd be no way to get it done. So that's why, you know, look, this is a tactic by the left. This is not real. Obviously, they don't care about the border. They don't care about border security. And I will promise you this. If Kamala Harris is elected, she will not for one day pursue that bill. She will not do it. She will no longer care about it until maybe she comes down to re-election and once again has to try to fool a bunch of people. Jeff, thanks so much for calling in. Let's go to Connie in North Carolina. Welcome, Connie.
Hi, Stu. How are you? Thanks for taking my call. It was a long wait.
I know. I apologize that we wanted to make sure that we took the call because I know there's so many people that lined up, and I appreciate you taking all the time and waiting.
No worries. Just wanted to really just kind of share a testimony and hope that people, your audience, will listen. And I'm sure a lot of people get this already, but because Glenn really walks the walk, I feel like, and talks the talk with his faith, I believe this is a great platform to share. But we were watching it last night, and the main comment is, no, I did not watch her speak, and I work in politics. The firm I work for is out of Texas. So I normally listen to everyone just so I can take notes. But I said, something said, no, don't watch it. And the only thing that kept coming to mind was the past few days I saw all of these clips, you know, which you played on your show. I had called before you even played these clips on your show about Joy. And every time I saw that, I literally just got sick because I realized that the spirit, the enemy, was trying to use joy to deceive us and make a mockery out of how I live my entire life, which is God's book of order. And the fruit of the spirit is joy. That's one of the fruits. So I just, you know, my husband's like, I can't believe you're not going to watch this. I'm like, no, I really don't want to watch it. And now I know clearly, and that's what the enemy does. The spirit of deception is so strong unless you are filled with the Holy Spirit, because there's a spirit of religion everywhere. And those people are going to be deceived because, I mean, she sounds good. I've heard her speak before. I'm like, oh, she's good. They're mm-hmm. going to love her, just like, you know, Gavin and some of these others. But you realize, wow, this is such a spiritual battle that we're in. And sometimes we just need to take action, get out in our community and, you know, form, you know, help with voting and really do something about it. And really just pray, because we don't even know. I mean, in North Carolina now, I read where you can now vote with your college ID, the schools now. So there's just a lot going on, and it is scary. My husband, he and his family came here years ago from South Africa for this great country. So he has seen a lot of this. And, you know, I have coworkers that live in, you know, Colombia that had to move their family from Venezuela, and part of their family is still there. They have seen this, and they are definitely, you know, not happy with the way that America is going, and really have said, you know, she's trying to come here, and she's saying, my friends and I, we don't want to come there anymore.
Now, that's terrible. You hate to hear that, because this is the place, right? It's the country. It's the best place, I think the best country that's ever graced the face of the earth. But that being said, you know, when you're talking about the joy part of it, obviously some of this is just politics, right? They want to switch the narrative. They believe they can show a contrast between Donald Trump, who, you know, look, a lot of times doesn't come off as super joyful. They're looking to change the dynamic of the race. But as you point out, Connie, there are always much larger forces at play. And thanks a lot for pointing it out. Mark in Georgia. Mark, welcome.
Hey, how you doing, Stu?
Really well. Thanks, Mark.
I wanted to say from the jump that, you know, you let me down a little bit when Glenn had his surgery, because I kept waiting for one of you guys to make a Marty Feldman reference, and nobody ever did.
Well, I hate to let you down on such an important part of the broadcast, but all I can do is apologize.
Waiting, but anyway, all the joy stuff. Okay, now I counted, I think, about 300 times that they quoted, or not quoted, but they said Trump. Mm-hmm. All this joy stuff is communist babble. It doesn't matter a damn what she says. It's designed to quell the masses. It's like, you know, what did Stalin say? Opium, mm-hmm. or religion is the opium of the masses. Mm-hmm. Well, in this case, that's what they want to hear. They want to hear those soft words. Everything's going to be okay. Remember, Joe Biden ran as a center, you know, uniter. And they're just dusting off that playbook and going the same way. But Trump is their white whale. They will never stop chasing him. He could come out tomorrow and say, hey, I'm for abortion. I'm for, you know, let's just open the borders. It would not matter. They will never, ever stop. And to us down here in the sticks, you know, I know Glenn is very, very adamant about, we have to find a solution. And I just turned 60, so Glenn and I are of the same age. And I have 7 grandkids that have to grow up in this world. And I keep saying, you know, it's going to get better. It's going to get better. We're going to find a way. But I'm not the smartest guy in the world, but I'm pretty smart. And I just don't see a way out, you know, not a good way out anyway. And I don't want that. I mean, you know, I serve my country. I spent 10 years in the Army. I spent 20 years as a sheriff's deputy. And I know what it's like to see the bad side of people. And I've always tried to be that person that sees the good in things. But these people have no good in them. They have one word in their brain, and it's power. At any choice or at any price, they will lie, cheat, steal. I think we all know that. And, you know, like Georgia, for example, you know, everybody thinks Georgia is Atlanta. We're not. There's a lot of Georgia. Georgia's the biggest state east of the Mississippi River. There's more to Georgia than the flipping airport. And, you know, we down here, you know, when I say I'm from Columbus, people go, oh, Ohio. I'm like, no, not Ohio. And I guess my point being is that if, and I talked to the local folks here in Trump's campaign about, you know, we may not win Atlanta, the counties of Atlanta, but we damn sure need to win every other county in the state. My county is notoriously blue all the time, and every county around us is red because the way that the congressional districts line up. But I think we are truly at that tipping point of where, you know, it either goes the way we want it to, and regardless, Trump could win with 320 electoral votes, and we all know what's going to happen. And I don't want it to happen, but I like to say I'm a realist. And, you know, Glenn is a great guy. I've followed him for years, read probably every one of his books. I'll be honest,
It's okay, he's not listening. You can say bad things about him. It's fine.
Project 21. You know,
oh, Agenda 21, that, yeah. Like, mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was like, is he on drugs?
Well, yes, but he's also right on a lot of that stuff.
Here we are. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, wow. But, you know, we have to think of the world we leave.
Yes, I agree. And look, you know, you mentioned your grandchildren. Of course, you want to grow up in a place where your grandchildren can thrive and live in the sort of land of blessings that we've been able to grow up in. And that's, of course, a priority. I will say, and you mentioned like what goes on in 2020 and Trump, maybe he wins with 320 electoral votes, but we know it's going to happen. You know, look, these are always concerns. The Democrats, of course, will do everything in their power to try to come up with whatever shenanigan they can. It is important, I think, to understand and to think about it. Even if you fully believe some election's going to be stolen, if we go into it with those thoughts, we will surely lose. Because you need to win an election like this, that they're pulling out every single stop up to and including going through essentially a coup to overturn their own primary. If they will go to those lengths, they'll go to whatever lengths they can. But if we don't look at this as an opportunity to win, if we look at this as a guaranteed loss because of whatever shenanigans we think might happen, we'll surely lose. We have to go into this, whether no matter what you believe is going to happen once those ballots are cast, you have to go into this believing that this is still a country that has reliable forms of democracy inside a constitutional republic. If you look at it any other way, I believe that you kind of have no chance. So, you know, suspend disbelief if you need to, but look at this election as an opportunity to turn back a lot of the policies that could really hurt the country and hurt the country for your grandchildren going forward. Linda in Florida, welcome. I appreciate it. You calling in, Linda, and thanks so much for waiting.
That's okay. I've been kind of struggling with the same issue that Glenn and you brought up earlier today about how do we shame the press into doing their job? Mm-hmm. I mean, how are we so many days into this and we know nothing about Kamala's policies except she's talking about raising taxes, which would be outrageous, the things that she's thinking about. And I'm a retired business owner. I owned a company that taught world-class salespeople. So I constantly think in terms of how do you sell an idea and so forth. And for weeks now, I've been thinking about that Trump should try using the term rope-a-dope, that the press is allowing Kamala to play rope-a-dope, which is what Muhammad Ali did, if you're old enough to remember the Ali Frazier fights and so forth. And I think it would give one of the things that Trump has to worry about is anything he says negative about Kamala. I mean, there's so many things to pick from, but anything he says often can make it look like he's the big guy beating up on the woman and so forth. And they just think of it as misogyny all the time. But actually, if we start coining the phrase that the press is allowing and her staff and so forth is allowing her to play rope-a-dope, it has so many connotations. First of all, everybody understands what it means. You know, you got your hands up so that they can't hit you with anything. And then when they're not looking, you know, you can take one shot at them. But the term dope is nice having it in there, because you don't have to say she's an idiot. You say she's playing rope-a-dope, and even if the people don't understand the term, it almost paints her with that term. So I think if we can get Trump talking about rope-a-dope, and when I heard that you were looking today for how can we shame the press, I thought what a perfect way to categorize what rope-a-dope is really talking about. It not only applies to her, but it especially applies to the press, that they're not doing their job, and we're only 80 days away or so.
Yeah.
And the other thing I had in my mind today was I live in the Villages, and we get a daily paper here. We have our own TV station, radio stations, all this stuff. It's a big place, 150,000 people. But
It's huge.
Anyway, I'm looking at the Daily Sun this morning, and of course I didn't listen to her speech. I already knew what it was going to be about. But the headline in the paper of the Daily Sun in the Villages today said the FBI, quote, U.S. faces many threats all at once. And I'm thinking, in fact, another thing they said is there was a Taiwanese official that made kind of a clandestine trip to the U.S., I think, this week. So obviously she wasn't in Washington to hold any meetings. Mm. And you're thinking about, if we're facing all these threats that we're all aware of, would we want her in the meeting room with any of these? I mean, what could she possibly add to it? And I mean, she has nothing presidential about her. And then, of course, the next headline is Harris invites voters to chart a new way forward. And I think that goes right back to our rope-a-dope. Nobody knows what that is.
Yeah, I like it. Linda, thanks so much. And honestly, I feel like now I'm a subscriber to that newspaper. Like, I felt like I read the entire thing. That's awesome, Linda. And I think, like, I like the innovative thoughts. I like, you know, trying to figure out a way to make this happen. And it is, you know, partially we can help with this one, right? If you are online and you are retweeting, you know, these claims against Kamala Harris, when you find a good policy, something that you want answered, pushing that stuff out. I mean, the media does tend to eventually react to something that goes really viral. They feel almost like shamed into, all right, let's just get it out of the way. We'll ask. And anytime you can put Kamala Harris in a situation where she's off balance, this is where she makes her mistakes. This is something, and let me give you another quick sports analogy off of the rope-a-dope idea. But, you know, I think a lot of people going into this, and I tried to say this on the air a zillion times, a lot of people went into this election and when Kamala Harris took over thinking that she sucks. She's just terrible. And look, she's not great. She's not amazing. But in comparison to Joe Biden, I mean, there is no comparison. She's much, much better than Joe Biden. She can do the basics. And I think a lot of people went into this just thinking, to use a basketball reference, that she's just terrible at basketball. She can't make a shot to save her life. That's not really true. The media is trying to make her into Steph Curry right now. That's not true either. She really is more Seth Curry than Steph Curry. Seth Curry is Steph Curry's brother. He's also an NBA player. And I, you know, he's an effective NBA player in certain circumstances. if you run an offense and you run Seth Curry off of a couple screens, you know, think of the media, a couple of media screens, and you get her some open shots, she can make an open three. She can do the basics. She, when inside of a scripted offense, is an effective player. That is who Kamala Harris is. She's very good behind the scenes. You saw the way she wrangled the presidential nomination in about 48 hours. She can do some stuff. Where she struggles, you know, Steph Curry can break down an offense by himself. Seth Curry doesn't really do that. Seth Curry is more like she's going to run off screens and going to make some shots. And that's more like Kamala Harris. Inside the structure of an offense, she's actually effective. But once you take her off out of structure, when you put her in a position where she needs to break down a defense by off the dribble, she's probably going to turn it over. And it's up to you as a defense. This is the Trump campaign. This is Donald Trump itself. It's J.D. Vance. It's conservative media. It's you and I online. It's putting her into positions where she has to step out of the structure of that offense, where she has to beat somebody off the dribble. You know, I mean, it's moments like Joe the Plumber from back in the day with Barack Obama. Get her in those moments. We have to find a way to do that. It's up to us to do it. The media is not going to do it for us. We have to force the media to try to do it out of shame or to figure out ways to do it ourselves, because that's the way you're going to beat Kamala Harris. Couple more calls before we go. Lucy in Ohio. Lucy, thanks so much for waiting. I appreciate it. What's up?
Hi, can you hear me okay? Because you're on speaker. I have a lousy phone.
All right, no worries. We can hear you. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, well, I want to send a lot of Buckeye joy from Ohio. But I was on for a little while, and it was regarding the last show. But you know how the media likes to say that Kamala speaks in word salads?
Yes.
Feeling watching night, which I just was a screaming maniac, was that speaks in concept salad. It's nothing concrete. It's all salady fluff.
Yep.
My father, these, her and Big Mike, all I'd say, my mother said, my father said, Joe Biden, my grandpa always said, at the dinner table, this is. Well, here's what my deceased beloved father, may he rest in peace, say. Politicians speak in nebulous realms of tangible abstractions. Mm. And that sticks with me from when I was a kid. And the older I get, the truer it is. This idea, when she spoke last night about, you know, I'm a small business owner. This idea that she wants to have opportunity economy, the whole thing is nonsense. It's communist speak, for the government will pick the winners and the losers. Mm. And when it comes to small business, and they will give cheap government loans to the people that they, the government, feel should get them. And when 75% of those businesses default or go out of business, they'll walk away, probably to a government job, and we'll be left holding the bag of their failure. You know, I'm supposed to feel joyful that I'm going to pay for their dream that I pay for in the long run.
Mm. Yeah, you know what? First of all, Lucy, you had a smart father. I mean, that's a great, that's a intellectual dinner table talk, but it's completely right. And, you know, a great example of this is opportunity economy. Opportunity economy kind of sounds good, right? Like, it sounds like something a conservative would say. It's like, you know, Tim Scott, you know, did the opportunity zones with Donald Trump. It's the type of thing that kind of sounds like that. Maybe that's part of that philosophy. It's something, though, that is designed to hide what the policy actually is. And this is what they're doing. This is their entire philosophy. And if the American people don't figure it out, it probably will be successful. Lucy, thanks so much for the call. Amy in Pennsylvania. Amy, welcome.
Hello, Stephen. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm wonderful. I just have a question real quick. Back in 2016, whenever Mr. Trump was first running, mm-hmm. a lot of the down ballot, down ticket congressmen and senators were all, you know, give us all three branches, give us all three branches. You know, we will repeal Obamacare and we'll do all this fabulous things.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing happened. I mean, nothing. They didn't repeal Obamacare. In fact, I don't even think they even voted to have a vote. And I know that's thanks to John McCain and the likes of Paul Ryan. But all I hear a lot of, I think Mr. Beck has said this maybe once or twice, but I mean, I know Mr. Hannity and a lot of other commentators are like really pushing this. And I'm just like, why? Is it going to be different this time, or why should we being politicians? Like, I don't believe anything they say, even Mr. Trump.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
no, always have a healthy skepticism. That's the right way to approach it.
But so why should we give them all three branches again?
Well, I mean, it's a good question and a fair question. I would say that, you know, first of all, the alternative is worse. So, I mean, I think that is true. You know, the Republicans, and I was making this point a lot leading up to the 2022 election, the Republicans with a strong 2022 had a real chance at a filibuster-proof majority here. But they did not do their job in 2022. And honestly, I don't think it looks all that spectacular for 2024 in the Senate and down ballot either, which is, you know, kind of embarrassing. They're really the map is very much tilted their way here in the Senate election. If you can get to 60 votes, you can really make major differences. It's when the, you know, Democrats have been able to do a lot of their sort of large structural changes is when they get to that position. Republicans aren't going to get there. What you can do is you can get judges in, and that was something that Trump was able to do and obviously made a pretty large difference in the Supreme Court and honestly all the way down through the judicial system. That's a big part of why you really care about the Senate. You'll get some good things out of that. I will also say that one of the big things, and this has been a big push for me when it comes to primaries, is making sure where you have really red states in primary elections, making sure you get good candidates out of them. You don't need a Mitt Romney in freaking Utah. Like, that is, it hurts you more than having a Susan Collins in Maine. Yeah, Susan Collins is going to vote wrong a bunch of times, but it's Maine. And maybe Susan Collins is the best you can do in Maine. Mitt Romney is not the best you can do in Utah. You know, Mike Lee might be, but Mitt Romney is not. And if we focus on those primary elections a little bit earlier and get good candidates in those bright red states, when you get to 55, 56, 60 senators, you can get a lot more done. I think this happens in the House as well. And, you know, what happens and has happened a lot is we've chosen to run candidates in states that aren't bright red that wind up losing in the elections. And I think we're facing a lot of that again this year. So there's a lot to improve there. I think the best thing you can say, and you could say this about the House right now, what they have been able to do is block the worst instincts of Joe Biden. That's it. That's all they've been able to do is just block the worst instincts. That is, though, a big improvement over an unfettered Joe Biden or an unfettered Kamala Harris. So that is an advantage. And Amy, thanks so much for the call. I wish I could give you more on that. It's not going to be perfect. Even when you get 60 senators, about 12 of them are going to be probably pretty horrible, and another 20 are going to be mediocre if things are going well. But it is your only hope, and you have to kind of push these things through. We have a system of checks and balances. It's one that I think is the best system ever developed, but they don't make it easy. That's the design of the system. It's not supposed to be easy. All right, we got through a bunch of the calls, and I appreciate everybody holding on and hanging out. Thanks so much for subscribing here. Hopefully, you've done that on the Studios America feed. If you missed it, a couple days ago, was it yesterday or a couple days ago, we released a State of the Race episode about RFK Jr. and what the impact of that will be. We do a State of the Race podcast right here on the Studios America feed to kind of break down the more nerdy aspects of the election if you happen to really want to do deep dives. So that is available on this feed as well, with more episodes coming. Thanks so much for tuning in. We will see you on Monday.